This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be, and we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richards.
I'm sure you've heard it all before, but you never really had a doubt. I don't believe that anybody feels the way I do about you now. And all the roads we have to walk are winding, and all the lights that lead us.
Place to Be Nation! Welcome to a great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rosero, coming to you live here on this sweaty Monday evening, where it is balmy, muggy, disgusting. I'm dead. Scott, how are you?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 495 of the longest running episodic motherfucking gold standard. It is quite soupy today, but haven't you already used up the hot basketball game nicknames for the league?
I didn't even
What'd you have to
this.
Name tonight?
I didn't even name it. Shit show. I mean, it literally when I got home, it literally looked like I went in a pool. Like that. I mean, everything was fucking disgustingly drenched. It was insane out.
Right.
But it's good. I feel like it's an NBA schedule. We've literally played 3 games in 6 days, so I'm good now for like a week and a half off. I'm all set. It's a lot.
That's funny. We are the fortnight of the big summer bash. We'll get to that a little bit later, but back in the big haunt in Manhattan this evening, and our the third member of our Trinity, JR, a very unique guest making their debut. Why don't you bring her in?
Yeah, is that why she's unique? Because it's a girl, I guess, here for us. It's rare, I guess, for us. And it's not Leah Griffin. No, joining us tonight is one half of Geek and Sassy, one half of Talk and Pop. You hear her on other Place to Be Nation pop shows. You've heard her on our Place to Be Nation Halloween special, our Place to Be Nation Christmas special, and she's got some other stuff in the works at PlaceToBeNation.com, up-and-coming rising star here, and that is, of course, the one and only Jennifer Smith. Jenny, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me. 495 episodes. Mm-hmm. That's insane. Do you have any advice for a young, aspiring podcaster such
quit
as myself?
Now. No, I'm like, keep going. Just keep going. Is, you know. I got nothing. whatever. Just keep doing it. That's what I would say. Keep doing it till you don't want to, and then fight through not wanting to, and then just keep doing it some more.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. Keep your, you and Miranda should always have, make the guests different, spread them out, have a nice pattern going, change the topics. Good stuff like that. Always make it different. Always make it different.
Like you guys.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Always make it different. We reviewed 400 wrestling shows.
Four. Different cities. Always different reviews, but they're different at least.
Yes.
Over the last 2 years, we reviewed. Second chick. So like, yeah.
We reviewed 60 shows from Madison Square Garden in the last 2 years. But yes, definitely mix it up. Some variance is key. Scott, I heard you recently call Jennifer and I a part of the idiots in New Orleans that were out drinking. Would you like to defend that statement on Main Event?
No. No.
It felt a little harsh.
It's not inaccurate, but...
It felt harsh.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there were levels of it. But I knew New Orleans was going to come up. Why wouldn't it? This is like the 11th straight New Orleans guest that has come on. I think JR loads it up on purpose. But, it's based on the stories. By the way, Jen, everything you tell is true. Just letting you know.
Yeah.
I make stuff up and everything she says is true, but if you corroborate our stories, they're all pretty equal.
No. I think hers are true and yours are, as Conrad would say, rumor and innuendo. Let me ask you this, Jen. I will ask this one question.
All right.
Everybody, you seem to have, a lot of, moxie, but it seemed like when you were at this karaoke bar that everybody just hid in the back and like laughed but didn't have the guts to go up and sing except what, Johnny Hollywood? Did you go up and sing?
No, I really wanted to, and I was actually kind of surprised by that as well. I thought that at least maybe a couple of us would get on stage, but at the same time, there was such a groove, like right where we were, mm-hmm. like we had our spot, mm-hmm. and it kind of felt like a bubble, like you didn't want to get out of that bubble. And
it also seemed like impossible to get up there. Like, I felt like there was a long way, but you didn't really know. And then the first night, the hostess, like, hated us because we were doing the Rusev Day stuff. So I wouldn't even want to approach that. I also think it was, like, so late in the night every time we got there. It seemed, like, easier just to chill in the back and dance mm-hmm. and sing ourselves.
I think all the more wanting to go up and drive her insane. I would have probably gone up and maybe even made her night even more miserable.
I think I was also anticipating singing at Cajun's at the
Cajun's,
tailgate.
It's actually.
Yeah, whatever. You said it wrong. But then by then I didn't have a voice, and then we didn't have karaoke.
Yeah, they
anyway.
Never turned it on. Yeah.
So.
Anyway. But, you know, Scott, I don't want to talk about New Orleans all night, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. You brought it up.
Well,
no, I actually would like to ask her a question too before we move on.
Go ahead.
What did you think of Sheriff Pete and the barbecue day? What did you think of that?
Well, I think I was standing in his way when he first got there, so he kind of shoved me to the side to, like, get to the food, which I don't blame him because food was great. I didn't talk to him that much, but everybody was awesome at the tailgate. Everybody I talked to was fun and nice, and it didn't feel weird, and everybody was chill.
Okay. Well, the traveling New Orleans experience will continue here on the Place to Be podcast over the next few episodes because we're not tipping our hat, but we have some more Mania guests, so I'll be happy to ask them their questions as well.
Yeah.
Well, this time next year, you know, we'll all be talking about Brooklyn or whatever, New York, whatever Mania,
Somewhere up here.
Somewhere
in the Northeast. Mm-hmm.
Gonna try.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that we've gotten that out of the way, and I'm looking forward to continued grilling of the other guests. Like Nick Duke, I didn't have to because I heard him on your show go mm-hmm. through his whole ordeals. Seemed like you're the only one that really enjoyed their lodging, though. Like your little whatever bed and breakfast place. You seem to enjoy yours more than others did. JR, I know you were a gypsy, so I won't even
I enjoyed all the places I stayed.
All 57 places you stayed. But you seem to like your lodging.
I think I spent more time, maybe, at my places than other people did. Perhaps.
Yeah.
Okay. JR was all over the place. Slept in Uber trunks. And
everywhere.
Yeah. You never know with that guy. Where
D'Amato.
He's ended up.
D'Amato couldn't fit anything. His 7'3" frame.
No, D'Amato left at like 10 p.m. every night on the dot. Because he had to be somewhere.
Usually pissed off at me on his way out the door.
Yeah.
Oh, what a shock. Anyway, all right. So, all right. Well, here we go. We're not in New Orleans.
Fucking Leslie Nielsen. You're gonna have it by SummerSlam. You're going to have it all pieced together, Scott. You're getting all your clues. You're getting everything ready.
No, I've got everything figured out.
By SummerSlam 88, he's going to have all the pieces in place.
Well,
the motto's here for SummerSlam. You can unleash the findings of your research.
That's right. Unleash my finding that Jen had a blast. I don't know where you were for 85% of your time, and D'Amato went to bed at 10:15. All right, figured it out. It's all good. Johnny Hollywood has a great voice, apparently. So,
he's a big
but nobody else does because nobody got up and sang. So that's fine.
Well, we sang. We just weren't on stage.
True. We sang like nobody was listening, Scott. We danced like no one was watching.
Mm. Wimps. All right, here we go. Let us not be in New Orleans. Let us go to Madison Square Garden for May 27th, 1988, from 33rd and 6th. It's been a month and since the last time we were here, as it usually is. It's a Friday night, which is uncommon. Usually MSG shows are on Monday. The only other show on this evening is somewhere nowhere near where any of us live, and that is the Civic Center in Bismarck, North Dakota.
Jesus.
Jen, ever been in North Dakota?
No, I have not.
No, probably never will I.
Probably not. No, thank you.
All it said on the history of WWE.com. By the way, what'd you think of Graham's hair?
Impressive. Oh, Graham's hair is epic. Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes.
You got to weigh in. Graham's hair or Claire's hair?
So hard. Well, I didn't get to run my fingers through it like Nick did. I'm going to go Graham on that one.
Mm. Yeah.
But AJ overall.
Well, that's basically Claire.
But better.
Kind of get the same thing.
But better.
Different color, but.
Because Claire's blonde. So.
Okay.
All right. And all Graham had on his site was included Rick Rude. So we will not see the ravishing one at the garden, but that's all he had on.
That's
there.
Good.
So, all right, JR, we have any notes before we move on?
A few stuff that's happened since our last Saturday night's main event in April. On the 5-7-88 Superstars, the Islanders and High Chief Afi defeated Outback Jack, Brady Boone, and Steve Blackman 5-52. Took a break from Secret Santa to roll over to Superstars. Bobby Heenan introduced Afi as the newest Islander after the bout. It's his only appearance on syndicated TV with the Islanders, but as we'll see, he will make the rounds or on the house shows. On the 5-11-88 challenge, debut of a female ring announcer. Fitting tonight, of course, since we have our first female Vintage Vault guest. And that is Mike McGurk. And the 5-14-88 Superstars of Wrestling, Hulk Hogan pinned Boris Zukov at 159 with a leg drop. It's Hogan's final appearance until the summer to do the filming of No Holds Barred. So. And then 5-21-88 during interview with Brutus Beefcake, Honky Tonk Man hit him with a guitar after he became distracted by Jimmy Hart, causing Beefcake to bleed from the back of his head. Later in the show, Craig DeGeorge interviewed Beefcake in his locker room, with Beefcake promising to tear Honky apart. And during a match between Bret Hart and Steve Lombardi, Jimmy Hart appeared at ringside, but Bret sent him backstage against Jimmy's wishes. And this MSG show, notable for a couple reasons commentary-wise, it's superstar Billy Graham's debut as color commentator. And also, we have the return of Roger Kent, began announcing in the AWA in 1960, hosted the Minnesota Sportsman from 1961 to 1969, an outdoors program syndicated to TV shows throughout Minnesota and the upper Midwest. So he had done some shows, I think, back in the day at MSG, but returns here to the Garden. As 88 turns, we're losing our Gorilla Jesse, Gorilla Bobby, Gorilla Al, it seems like, and I think we're going to be stuck with old Raj and a rotating mix going forward. So for a little bit, anyway. That's it.
Okay. All right. And, of course, his color commentator, apparently the recently, I assume, retired, at least from in-ring, and that is superstar Billy Graham.
Yeah, he talks about it a lot over the next couple of shows. I think he tries to make a comeback, and then that's when they do the final angle that takes him out. So, I think, yeah, he's an announcer, I think, from here through the end of the year for us. So.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Why don't we dive in with our opener?
All right, why don't we? And that is Special Delivery Jones taking on the Conquistador. And as we said, Kent and Graham not really setting us up for success on this evening out of the gate, but we'll see. Shaky start as SD is somehow still hanging around. Fuck, I mean, we're in mid-88 and the son of a bitch is still out here slugging away. Graham wonders if Conquistador's from El Salvador, and Kent just shrugs that off. Kent does want to know if the gold outfit will help him, though, and Billy says no. Jones starts hot tossing Conquistador around the ring, keeping him all out of sorts. Conquistador keeps trying to beg off as Billy says SD has never looked better, which may be true. Conquistador lands a tight forearm to the throat to cut SD off, and he starts to work the neck and upper back. SD tries to punch his way back into it, but that gets cut off, and then Jones shakes that off and hits some shots to the buckle, showing off his hard head as always. Mounts his comeback, including an atomic drop that led to some absurd selling by the Conquistador, who then comes back with a hard kick and a chin lock. SD makes another comeback, lays in some headbutts, and tries to rip off the mask. SD gets a crossbody block, but Conquistador rolls through and hooks the tights to steal the win, which the crowd was kind of pissed at. They were actually pretty into this the whole time for the opener. And it was fine. I thought they kind of stayed in their lane. They got the crowd hooked in. They didn't try anything, you know, beyond what they're capable of. Executed all the basics. And I thought they, you know, they stuck to it. So I actually went a star and a half on this, Scott. I thought it was a fine little opener.
Yeah, I gave this a star and a half as well. Again, I mean, SD Jones is SD Jones. But the comments I'm going to make more is not about the match, but I'm curious if there was, like, I don't know, was NAB going on that weekend, the convention in Vegas? I feel like nobody's around. It's very strange. Like, nobody's around, like, in terms of announcers. Like, why did they have to get these guys to do the show? Like, I'm confused. We'll see somebody later on cover for Superstar in a match, and, you know, we'll get to that.
Maybe
when we
just
get
giving
there,
Gorilla, like, the summer off or something, because Kent's here for at least the next one, too. So, man, they might have been mixing it up a little bit.
I mean, that's a chance. We didn't even. No, true. I mean, we didn't even see, like, Craig DeGeorge do backstage interviews.
Right.
It's very, I don't know, it just seemed weird. Like, it seemed like nobody was around.
Was this Memorial Day weekend, I wonder?
The Friday of? Possibly. It's entirely possible. That's a good point.
Off or something.
No, it's entirely a good point. You know, I'm not sure.
Yeah, Memorial Day was May 30th that year. So
okay,
yeah.
So maybe they were all off. All right, makes sense. Because I feel like even the broadcast is kind of rushed. Like Roger Kent open says, "Hey, Superstar Billy Graham, we got a lot of action. We'll be back right after this." And then they just went right into the match. Like there was no, you know, like Gorilla and Alfred would do a little banter on the matches or whatever. I mean, obviously Roger Kent probably didn't have the background of feuds and stuff like obviously Gorilla would clearly. So they probably really didn't do much in that aspect because they didn't really know the background. So I can understand that. I mean, the match is fine. Your official match time is 9:13, so a pretty meaty opener. It was all right. I actually gave it a star, slightly less. It served its purpose for an opener. Obviously, the roster was still kind of in a state of flux. You know, obviously you keep some of these, you know, jobber guys around for the loop. But that's pretty much it, Jen. I don't know. What did you think of the guy dressed in all gold? Kind of crazy, huh?
All right, so I'm gonna preface this by saying that this is the first MSG I've ever watched. So, of course, I listen to you guys, but I've never watched any of it. And also, my taste in wrestling is sort of off the wall because I enjoy campiness and absurdity. But also, it has to be good and not just, like, straight up dumb. So, the gold body condom here appeals to me. Like, because I think it looks, like, fun.
Meaty, like Scott said.
Yeah, yeah, like, fun. And I like SD Jones being super cocky, kind of strutting around, kind of showboating a little bit. Something that was unexpected is I felt like I was in anatomy class because it was, like, nonstop barrage of, like, body parts and muscle groups and just... like gonna pull like what goes where and what body part is doing the work at any given moment.
Right.
But it was funny. Yeah, it was fun. It was what it was. I'd said a star and a half. But at the end, to me, it looked like SD had his shoulder up. So I was confused.
It's kind of typical SD. We've seen that before to him where, like, some of these older guys don't want a job or they'll job, but they want to make it look like, I don't know. I think in their mind, they think if they kick up, like, right at three or they kind of have the shoulder up, like, it's questionable if they lost. So sometimes you'll see guys like him kind of do screwy shit like that. Like, they'll kick out right at three or have their shoulder slightly up. And I think they think it's safe face or some nonsense.
Mm. Yeah. Right. No, that's happened. Yeah.
Either or he just fucked up. Which is entirely
that's entirely possible too.
I liked his relentlessness trying to get the mask off and then failing to do so.
He does that with every mask guy. He used to do that on the old shows in like 79, 80 on the network. He'd do that too. That was a big thing in the 80s where baby faces would try and take off heels masks. Happened in all the promotions.
I like it.
Yeah. Well, that's the only time you'll see that storyline. I don't think that's going to happen. SD Jones doesn't chase the conquistador around the loop to try and get the mask off. But yeah, I mean, it served its purpose. And I guess it kind of got the crowd fired up. But
yeah, it was fine.
So right. Anyway, next.
Next match is the opposite of fine. And that's poor Greg the Hammer Valentine saddled with the fucking animal George Steele. I don't know why Steele is still around. And why he's still in these matches. And poor, poor Hammer. Getting stuck with this. Steele bites and runs Hammer to the corner to get started. Billy questions Hammer's shin guard as Greg begs off the maniac. Steele just keeps trying to bite, and Hammer has to fend him off and kick and choke away. Steele uses foreign object to cut down Hammer and then plays hide and seek with it. Hammer takes out the leg and starts to pick it apart, and then goes to the figure four, but Steele goes to the eyes. Steele goes outside and grabs the timekeeper's hammer and hits the ref, chases Valentine to the back with it. And that's pretty much it. So that's awful. I mean, I don't get it. I don't get the match or the finish. Steele is just such a waste of time. He adds so little. I mean, if you want him on these house shows or pops, I guess, like, put him in a tag or as a manager. Like, this, we don't need to see this. Especially with a guy like Valentine that deserves more. So, I mean, God bless him for trying here, but just nothing. Nothing goes on and nobody's helped. This is just a big fucking pile of dud. And Steele can just go away finally, please, at some point, Jennifer.
All right. Well, see, this is where this is where my love of absurdity comes in. Starting with the fur coat that Steele's wearing on his back. but it was that level of like of dumb that kept me laughing. Like I was still kind of into that. And I'm, you know, I'm trying to take it serious, right? I'm trying to, and they're not giving me much to work with. So I'm just like, okay, I'm going to
guess we found the friggin' demographic they were looking for right here.
I told you.
Should have ran this fucking shit in the South, I guess, apparently. So buy right in.
And like, I didn't know biting was legal. Like how?
It's not. He's a stupid fool. That's the problem.
They didn't actually bruise on Greg's chest wrestle or that much, you know? So, kind of hard to just say it was a wrestling match. It was basically just stupidness.
It was stupid. You can say it.
It was weird.
It was as stupid as it gets.
But I still want a star because I like weird.
When was the last time anybody gave George Steele a George Steele
Pete
match?
Probably. Yeah, Pete probably epic. Gave us fucking 3.5.
This is ridiculous.
Yeah,
I get boys.
I guess you could. I like the term absurd because it's pretty much what he is. But I mean, there's no business for him being on this show with a guy who's a great worker who you could put in with somebody else, and instead he's got to futz around with this guy. It's terrible. I don't know why they think he still makes money for the company. I don't know. Make him an agent at this point, or a booker, or whatever, a guy, or
I mean,
know, something.
Again, the crowd. There is smatterings of the crowd that likes him. I just feel like he should not be in there. If he has to be on, he shouldn't be in there with guys of value. Like Valentine has value still. Like if you want to stick him out there, put him with the fucking conquistador. You know what I mean? And let them go 3 minutes to open the show, or right after intermission, and like that's fine. Like just two. Like if you want to do that. But saddling the hammer with him just made no sense. Like, because it speaks to me like they're trying to actually make him relevant on some level.
Right.
Like he's in some kind of issue, especially since we don't get a finish. So that's my bigger deal with Steele. I mean, if they feel like they want to have him there because the crowd's into him and trying to sell the fucking dolls or whatever. Like, but we don't need him here. Or let him come out and walk around the crowd with the dolls. Like, just do that. You know, like something. There's something beyond being involved with somebody that matters. And Valentine matters, and it's a waste. Especially since we're starting the Valentine face stuff. Like, he had a good showing in Mania. You know, like we're getting somewhere with him coming off the Dream Team. He's supposed to be reestablished as a player, and now he's, like, doing this bullshit.
Right. No, it's nonsense. Nonsense. I don't even know. I mean, we have to – we'll need to document this, but I don't even know how long he's even still around.
Well, at least next month, I can tell you that.
Well, yeah, we know that. Yeah, well, we find out that later, yeah. But I'm curious to see if he's on that special show that we'll be doing soon. That kind of precursor to the big pay-per-view debut in August. I'm curious if he's there. I don't remember, but it's a waste of time at this point.
I've seen better Mack Truck matches than George Steele matches.
Yes, Mack Truck. He needs the what are they? Not the jewels. What were those things called?
Trinkets.
The trinkets. Yeah.
All right.
Anyway, that match was 5:54, and you're in. Jen reveled in it, and the rest of us will never get it back. So, why don't we get to the next one?
All right. Next match is some tag team action. Hopefully, a little bit better than that fiasco we just watched. And that is featuring the Young Stallions taking on the Fabulous Rougeau brothers. Interesting tag match here. Hopefully, pick up the pace. The Rougeaus are carrying little American flags with them. It looks like maybe a heel turn is, you know, the way they're acting. MSG boos them. Billy puts over the Stallions' diet and gym time. We open with a fun back and forth that ends with the Stallions chuckling while the Rougeaus are frustrated. Powers gets two on a roll-up, but Ray drives him to the floor when he kicks out. After more stalemate, Jacques walks over to both Stallions and shakes their hand, pats them on the head condescendingly. And I'm really digging this quasi-heel act they have going on as they're slowly making the transition, just really being, you know, smarmy and insincere. The Rougeaus take turns quick tagging as Kent's not buying into their act. They're able to grab hold of Roma's leg and start to get right to work on it with quick tags and double teams. The Rougeaus are super vocal and hamming it up while working sneaky offense. Roma escapes and tags Powers, and now he goes in on the leg of Jacques. Kent is really into the different muscles on these guys, calling them out by name and just gushing over them. To Jenny's point earlier, Romer twists Ray into a Boston Crab as the Stallions continue to dominate the action. Ray survives and tags Jacques, who gets a crab of his own on Roma, chit-chatting the whole time he has it hooked in. Roma powers out, the trade covers, but after a crisscross, Ray clobbers Paul from behind after a blind tag. The Rougeaus get right back to work, pummeling Roma back and forth, working flawlessly as a team. That ends quickly as Roma escapes Jacques and tags Powers, who comes in hot and beats on Jacques from corner to corner. Powers gets a sleeper hooked in and snaps off a nice power slam for a near fall. Things break down. We get some trickery by the Rougeaus, leading to Jacques getting Powers in a small package for the win. I thought it was pretty fun. Good pace and good heat. The Stallions really worked hard, and I love the Rougeaus' new gimmick. I think it's a winner. It's super entertaining in its early stages. Nice win for them. It's good because it's freshening them up. They were getting real stale as faces, and this insincere smarmy shit they got going on, you can tell is going to work well because they do it nicely. So, Scott, I went 2.5 on this.
I went 2.5 on it as well. It was our longest match of the evening at 14:26. And that's good because four good workers and give them the longest time. I enjoy thoroughly the smarminess of the Rougeaus kind of slowly being insincere because, I don't know, like Jacques has that look of being insincere. So it kind of actually works out well for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, it might be one of the best Stallions matches we've seen in a while. They really worked their tails off here, and it was a good back and forth. They worked well together. The Stallions got the benefit of a good crowd, and the Rougeaus took advantage of their smarminess. Perfect term. But I gave it 2.5. I wanted to give it 3, but it didn't quite turn the corner to be a 3-star match. I got to check the – I know they were at the Spectrum probably that previous Saturday, the 21st. I think there was a house show at – or Sunday, I should say. I think there was a house show at the Spectrum, and I want to check and see if they wrestled there too. But I'm curious to see if they had other matches because I think they could have really – had they kept going, probably could have had a pretty good set of matches and a good feud if you wanted to push the Stallions a little bit. But maybe put them in a more high-profile venue and give them some real time,
mm-hmm.
Maybe on TV. So, Jen, we're kind of a little more normal here with 4 normal-looking guys as compared to what you've seen so far. Guys wearing rubbers and strange green-tongued animals. But what would you think?
Well, actually, it looks like I got one right. I went 2 and 3 quarters, but then I remembered you guys don't do quarter stars. So then I said 2.5. I thought it was fun. It took me a minute to realize that the handshaking was all fake. I'm like, what the fuck is happening right now? And so then as it de-evolves, I'm like, oh, okay, they're being dicks. Okay, I got it. I like that. And it was acrobatic, jumping mm-hmm. all around. It was really quick, not very many parts where I was like, oh, my God, please get it over with. What else? More of the anatomy class, which just goes throughout the whole show. It was
Kent
weird.
Was all over it in this one.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, I liked how he called it the intimidation the Canadian way. I thought that was a nice turn of phrase. And I liked it a lot.
I think she's quarter star shaming us, Scott.
I am.
I know. Usually our other guests just do it and move on. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, though, JR, she's very nice to say, well, I know you guys don't, but that's okay. Our other guests just
Pete
like,
just
yeah.
Does it, yeah.
Pete just doesn't care.
Well, I'm the guest here, so I could, I got to conform to your format here.
We do like your podcast etiquette, so that's one thing you do very well. We have a lot.
Very classic.
We have many guests that aren't, so. All right, so probably the match of the night, and I have a feeling maybe one other match could counter that later on.
Yeah, and I'm really digging the Rougeaus stuff. I'm excited to see.
Yeah.
For the first time, I think there's some interest and intrigue around them, so I'm interested to see how this continues to develop. But they were already mm-hmm. They were meant for it immediately. There's not even any easing into it. Just we see them here and they're doing it and it's awesome.
Yep, absolutely. All right, we move on.
All right, our next match, interesting one on paper, and it's Brutus the Barber Beefcake taking on the One Man Gang. Something we haven't seen much of, and that's Beefcake against a man much bigger than him. I feel like it's something mm-hmm. we don't usually see. So it'll be interesting. No Slickster tonight. Barbara gets a huge pop from the fired-up crowd. Beefer sticks and moves as we see a Rosati sister with a giant cardboard scissors taking a break from the ravioli eating contest and showing up here. That tickles Kent. He's, like, dying at that. He loves it. We get a massive beefcake chant as the two continue to dance. Beefer starts to land some red hands and forearms, rocking the gang and eventually knocking him into the ropes. Kent keeps calling one-man gang one-man, which is odd. Like, call him gang. Call him one-man gang. Like, one-man is such an odd thing to call him. Because he knows it's not his first name, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is there a chance he thinks that's his name, his real name?
Oh, God. Ridiculous.
It's not? You mean it's not?
I mean, no, maybe sadly. It was. Maybe I'm wrong. maybe Roger Kent is right. Beefer works the arm and the shoulder ferociously. Gang is really hurting. Gang finally clubs Beefcake off him, starts to unload, and the crowd is rallying the barber. Gang focuses on the lower back and ribs, eventually twisting into a bear hug. Beefcake punches free, but one man goes to the eyes to keep control. One man then whiffs on a splash off the middle rope. Beefcake pops up and starts to fire away with hard blows and a jumping knee to the face that drops Gang for the first time. Beefcake jumps on Gang's back with a sleeper, but Gang wobbles to the ropes and they both tumble hard to the floor where they're counted out. They battle in the ring after the bell with Beefcake getting the best of it, eventually getting a snip of Gang's hair. This is really fun. The crowd was hot. Beefcake had a manic energy, and the match built really well, too. A lot of heavy strikes to start and to close, and I liked Beefcake finally dropping him with a knee. Like, I thought that was really well done. And I thought Gang was sharp, too, really focusing on the back. For a match that was filled with strikes, I thought this was quite good. I think it's better than some of the Gang stuff we've seen even with Savage. I think Beefcake actually pulled this out of him. And to see Beefcake go toe-to-toe with a guy bigger than him, like, really helped him in his face run. So I went 2.5, which surprised me, but I really enjoyed this one, Jenny.
I actually really liked it, too, although those pants, Beefcake's pants, are very, very terrible. No. And the crowd just fucking loved him, mm-hmm. and I'm like, really?
Yeah. They liked the pants?
Yeah. Ugh.
It was the 80s.
No, I liked it a lot. It's hard. I think that Beefcake is pretty huge, so it takes a pretty huge dude to make him look small. Mm-hmm. And I liked how he got the hair at the end. He looked like one man had his feelings hurt quite a bit by that. Because
which man? Like, just one man had his feelings hurt?
It looks like he takes real good care of his hair. So I know we hated to lose that. Yeah, it was good stuff. I said 2 stars.
I gave it 2 stars as well. Your time was 10:20. Something about One Man Gang I've kind of enjoyed even more and more as we've Le One Man as we've seen so far. I gotta say, JR, I'm really impressed with kind of his movement in the ring. I know we always were impressed as we started this journey with Bundy. That we were more impressed with, my God, Bundy's so mobile. And I got to say, Gang, who's probably bigger than Bundy, I guess, in some ways, is also, he's much more mobile in the ring for a guy his size than I remember seeing. And I think seeing some of these matches that we don't remember or didn't see, I think has helped that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Pretty good big guy.
Yeah, he is mobile. A good bumper. I think we even see that eventually with Akeem, too. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, he's one of those guys that, like, I don't know, he makes... like his eventual tag team partner that we'll be seeing soon, he makes the weight work for him the way, like, he's kind of nimble. So it looks impressive when he's bouncing up and down and bouncing off the ropes and falling to a knee, because the weight just kind of sways with him versus him just, like, not being able to move and just being fat. You know what I mean? Like, he kind of,
mm-hmm.
and I think yep. he's really tall and his legs, like, aren't super fat. So it's just, he's got this kind of
right.
weeble look to him that,
yes.
It's, like, interesting because the way he moves around and again, uses the weight to his advantage really helps, like, his bumping look really cool.
Yes. No, it absolutely did. And as for Beefer, he's crazy over. I mean, that was yeah. a great pop. Fortunately, thank God, a bigger pop than George Steele got. I enjoyed the match. I really did. I thought it was a good back and forth, and I like the take on, you know, Beefcake is not used to wrestling bigger guys. Usually it's more technical guys that kind of help elevate his game. And I think this match helped him as well. Because I think they still have plans for him.
Beefcake?
yeah.
Well, it's clear, too, like we mentioned in the notes before the show, is that it seems like he's still keeping things going with Honky, so.
Yeah, exactly. So whatever happened at WrestleMania obviously is not the end of the story. So they're keeping that up, and I think that's why. But you kind of knew going into this match that this had double something written all over it, double count out, double DQ. No one was going to win this match clean. It was just a question of where they were going to go to tell the story to get to that point. But you knew when you saw these two guys against each other that neither was going to win clean, and there was going to be some type of schmoz or a double something count out or DQ. It was just a question of whether the match itself was going to be good. And it was good. Yeah. It was very good. So
I really like that part where he's just hammering, and then hits it with the high knee. Like, the crowd was super into that. That was really well done.
Yep, I agree 100%. Yeah. No, it was a great match. And, again, knowing ahead of time that it was not going to be a clean finish. Again, you look at both of them and you go, one's not going to job to the other. So it was just a question of what to do from when the bell rang to the end of the match. And then and see if that worked out. And it actually did. So good match. Nobody wins, but that's okay. We see if things continue with these two, maybe on the loop. Beefer looks good, and the gang looks good. So all winners except for each other because they don't win the match. Speaking of two guys who never win matches.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4.
Vincent Kenny McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Fuckface Rob Houston could go murder himself in this fucking sleep update. In May of 1988, Jim Duggan was videotaping himself, sticking things in his ass, and showing it around the locker room like the prick that he is. Scott Criscolo, how the fuck have you been?
Wow, VKM, it's been so long. How you been?
Oh, Steph, I didn't know you were here. What are you doing here?
Hi, Dad. We've talked about this, right? You can't just bust in on whatever I'm doing.
I want to bust.
I'm here to talk to Scott. I want to confront him. It's been too many years, you know, of him lusting after my husband publicly. So, Scott, I just need you to back off, quite frankly, because I'm worried about the state of my marriage.
That's right, bitch. Back off.
That's
my son-in-law. The fruit of my loins.
Does he know that we're having this conversation? I don't see him here. Why is he here? Why do this behind his back? I don't do anything behind his back. So why are you doing things behind his back? What's the deal?
I wanted to have a conversation with you, and you know, not involve him right now, and to see if we could work it out amongst ourselves.
Oh. Maybe he's at the movies, Crisco. I heard you have a hit movie out with Armento, Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Well, it's not a WWE. It's not a WWE production because Kane's not in it. But
is that feature film about you losing that dog shit ravioli contest, Captain Crunch? Sucks. My fucking ass!
Fuck that shit, bitches!
Step up like a man next time, will ya?
We got robbed.
Fuck. Well, I mean, fucking Hunter, and I don't know. He's gonna be.
Dad, am I throwing you off?
Yup. How you doing, young lady? That feeling you giving me will drive me crazy. You don't have to play about the joke. I was at a loss for words the first time we spoke.
If you're looking for a girl that'll treat you right, you're looking for her in the daytime with the light.
Been typing for play the cards right, and I'll try to find out by the end of the night.
You expect me to just let you hit it, but will you still respect me if you
hit
it?
All I have to do is try, give me one chance. What's the problem? I don't see no ring on your hand. First to admit it, I'm curious about you. You seem so innocent.
You wanna get in my world, get lost in it. Boy, I'm tired of running, let's walk for a minute.
Promiscuous girl! Whoever you are, I'm all alone, and it's you that I want.
Promiscuous boy, you already know that I'm all yours. What you waiting for?
Promiscuous girl, you're teasing me. You know what I want, and I got the killer bee.
promiscuous boy. Let's get to the point, cause we're on a roll. Are you ready? Roses are red, some diamonds are blue. Chivalry is dead, but you're still kinda cute.
Hey, I can't keep my mind off of you! Where are you at? Do you mind if I come through?
I'm out of this world, come with me to my planet. Get you on my level, do you think that you can handle it?
They call me Thomas, last name Crown. Recognize game, I'm gonna lay mine down.
I'm a big girl, I can handle myself. But if I get lonely, I'ma need your help. Pay attention to me, I don't talk for my help.
I want you on my tag team!
So does everybody else.
Keep it on the low. Let your guard down, ain't no one gonna know. If you with a girl, I know a place we can go.
What kind of girl do you take me for?
Promiscuous girl, wherever you are. Like McGurk's alone, but it's you that I want.
Promiscuous boy, you already know that I'm all yours. What you waiting for?
Oh, promiscuous girl, you're teasing me. You know what I want, and that's a team that I need.
Promiscuous boy, let's get to the point, cause we're on a roll. Are you ready?
Don't get mad, don't get mean.
Don't get mad, don't be mean.
Hey, don't be mad, don't be mean.
Don't get mad, don't be mean.
Wait, I don't mean no harm. I can see you with my t-shirt on.
I can see you with nothing on. Feeling on me before you bring that on.
Bring that on?
You know what I mean.
Girl, I'm a freak, you shouldn't say those things.
I'm only trying to get inside of your brain to see if you can work me the way you say.
It's okay, it's alright, I got something that you're gonna like.
Is it the truth or are you talking trash? Is a game MVP like Steve Nash?
Kevin Nash, promiscuous girl, wherever you are, I'm all alone, and it's you that I want.
Promiscuous boy, I'm calling your name. But you're driving me crazy the way you're making me wait.
Promiscuous girl, my wife Linda's a bitch. So you know what I want, and I got what you need.
Promiscuous boy, we're one in the same. So we don't gotta play games no more.
Oh, Shawn Michaels, yes! Here comes Bret the Hitman Hart. It's the new generation. Fuck that! That's hot! What do you think of that shit, Chris Golo? What, do you want to see that at WrestleMania? Next year when you're jerking off in the seats at fucking MetLife, you fucking piece of shit?
That was a private recording, you know?
That's Hulk Hogan! Nothing's private! Nothing recording's recorded private. It's all leaked.
No ring on your finger, huh, Steph? Oh, interesting.
You leave Daddy's girl alone, you monster!
Somebody may want to know about that. No ring on the finger, huh? Oh, I wonder why.
You know what, Chris Golo? You can keep the game. I got Daddy's little girl right here. She's all mine
anyway.
Yeah,
sure you do. Yep. You wanted to be in the WAP movie, but because Kane wasn't in it, you walked away. Big money, Vince. Big money. Why don't you go back? He's got the GPS going. He'll take you to LaGuardia or whatever. Maybe you want Graham in the car instead of Claire because his hair's lusher.
I don't know who these people you're talking about are.
Get in the car.
Come on, Steph. Let's get in the limo.
All right, Daddy.
Hit it, Armento! Yo, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want!
So tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
So tell me what you want, what I really, really want!
So tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
I really, really want to kill Dolph Ziggler! If you want my future!
Forget my past.
If you want to get with me!
Better make it fast.
Now don't go wasting my precious time.
Get your act together, we could be just fine.
I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want.
So tell me what you want, what you really, really want.
Oh, I'll tell you what I want, what I really, really want. I want to zinga, 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 fuck you. If you want to be my lover.
Gotta get with my friends.
Make it last forever.
Friendship never ends.
Oh, if you want to be my lover.
You have got to give.
Taking is too easy.
But that's the way it is.
So we got a big WrestleMania 4 rematch up next. And that is kind of sad, though, in a way. because one of the best members of that whole situation is now gone, and that is the British Bulldogs teaming with Coco Beware to take on the Islanders and Bobby Heenan. Again, like we saw back in Atlantic City, but sadly, the great Tama is gone, and in his place, as we heard earlier, High Chief Siviafi. Anything but a high chief, a disaster chief, maybe. But Tama had left. The reports are fuzzy. Some say he quit. Others say he was fired due to failing drug tests. Either way, it's sad to see him go. He was someone, whether it was as Tonga Kid in the early days or, you know, later here with the Islanders, that we've really enjoyed. We've talked a lot about his, you know, obviously the matches with Strikeforce and Strikeforce and the Islanders, which were great, of course, and then here. So he did leave in 1988. He never makes another appearance pretty much after WrestleMania. After leaving the WWF, Fatu begins performing in Puerto Rico for the WWC as Tama. January 89, he and Dan Crawford won the tag team championships there. In 1989, joined WCW as a Samoan Savage, as part of the Samoan SWAT team, and eventually, of course, left there as well. Worked around the circuit a little bit, did some stuff in the UWA, and really worked the indies until retiring finally in 2011. So he ended up having a decent run after, but to me, he was a guy that was very, just a lot of missed potential, Scott, I think, for what could have been with him when you look at how good he was specifically once the Islanders turned heel, just how on point and as great as Haku was, Tama really carried that team for a while from a character point of view. Definitely someone that should have been more. Do you agree?
100%. He definitely embraced the heel. I don't say Haku didn't, but Haku was a different kind of guy. He didn't have that. He didn't have the outgoing charisma. He was more of the blunt force object, whereas Tama just embraced being the snarky little prick who embraced it greatly and rode with it. And, you know, when you're just a good worker like Haku is, you're going to have a little sizzle there, and that's what Tama brought. So it was a shame, and it's a bummer that it didn't work out because, I mean, they had a good run. I don't know, unfortunately, with Demolition being the tag team champions, it's kind of hard. A lot of the good heel teams are kind of stuck. But still, they were putting on good matches, and this feud was great that we're about to talk about in a moment. And they really carried things. From a tag perspective, while Demolition was getting, you know, their feet under them before they became champions and as champions. So this pinch hit job tonight is not good whatsoever. He may have been high.
I'm in on a Samoan. Put him in there. Afi is just, I can't believe he's in a round. It's awful.
I know,
like,
really.
I thought we were done with this scrub.
Yeah.
All right, so it's funny because the graphic even says Tama, so that was funny. So it must have really been last minute. Big pop for the Bulldog and Coco and all the mascots. Matilda chases Bobby away as Graham calls Matilda he, which made me laugh. Kent talks about Peter Maivia, explaining to him the High Chief ceremony, so get some insight there. I picture Kent like at a luau sitting on a little bench with Peter Maivia as he's explaining the ceremony to him. We get a loud weasel chant as the heel stall. Bobby teases starting with Coco, but after more shenanigans, including Coco laying on his back, Coco catches him and peppers away, shoots him hard to the corner. Bobby bails. We reset with Afi and Dynamite, who trade some power shots until Dynamite works the arm. Davey tags in and chucks Afi around until he goes to the eyes. Haku comes in, gets more of the same, and the Bulldogs and Coco take turns dominating Haku, pounding the arm. Haku eventually turns the tide on Coco, and then eventually Davey. Afi and Haku work on Davey, trying to snag pins where they can. Davey escapes and tags Dynamite, who mows through Haku and gets two on a leg drop. Haku blocks him and hits a stiff backbreaker. The Islanders start to quick tag and focus on the head and the back. Kent explains the different types of martial arts as Bobby breaks up Dynamite pin attempt. The Islanders maintain control, and Bobby even sneaks in and chokes Dynamite with the tag ropes, which Billy calls a crime, brother. Kent calls Bobby's tights his tunic, which also made me laugh. Kent. I actually enjoyed him because he's such a fucking mess. That's not technically a tunic, right? I mean, am I off? Like, I thought a tunic was, like, looser.
Yeah, it's not a tunic.
No, that wasn't a tunic.
Cutting edge of fashion here tonight, yes. Mm. Breaking down tunics. Right. Haku hit a great back suplex. Dynamite eventually sneaks free and tags Davey, who gets two on Haku on a power slam. Coco comes in next and peppers all three with drop kicks and a punch. Bobby breaks up an abdominal stretch with the ref turned around. Bobby slugs Coco with a foreign object and steals the win. Great heat all through this one. Odd finish, though, because the Islanders are done. so I was thinking, why not let the Bulldogs get the win? Because, you know, that feud should be put to bed. But we'll see why. A really fun match. Bobby was masterful out there in the heel role. Afi's better. I thought he was actually better here than in the past. He's limited, which is fine because Haku is able to carry a lot of the heavy lifting. So he actually maybe fits better here than as a singles guy. The Bulldogs were crisp, too. I thought this was really fun. I thought it was actually, even without Tama, I thought it was a tick better than Mania. I went 3 stars. And it makes sense later why Bobby got the win. But we never really see the Bulldogs get one over on the Islanders, it feels like, throughout any of this. It feels like this feud is actually more to put Bobby in position to do other stuff than get the Bulldogs over. What do you think, Scott?
I gave this 3.5 stars. I really liked it. I thought it was really fun. And Bobby, you know, Bobby's just great at whatever he does. And when we did our – when everyone did their you know, GWWE greatest of all time, I don't think there was any real debate on putting him on there. He may not have been the cookie cutter quote superstar that the other, you know, that most people had on their lists, but this guy was great at everything. And no, I mean, obviously he doesn't have work rate or anything, but he gets what to do and when to do it. And most managers, you know, you can't put Slick in this spot. You can't put, I mean, you could sort of put Jimmy Hart, but not really. Bobby's really the only manager in the company that you can really do this with. And so it was smart to kind of take advantage of that and work it in the storyline. I feel bad for Coco that he actually had to lose to him, but that's what Coco does.
Really? The number 50 on your GWE list should be putting over Bobby Heenan?
It wasn't 50. It was like 70.
May as well.
I'd have Coco at 50. Oh, you had Coco at 4.
Like, you say that like 70 is like, okay. I didn't have him at 50. I had him at 70.
Well, it's one of your favorites of all. Would you have him at 3?
I didn't have him ranked like a normal human being.
Oh, I didn't realize that we had to copycat your fucking list. Why the rest of us even do one? See, Jen, this is what I have to do with every week.
That's right. I'm curious why the rest of you did any. But yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But you should all do it. You should all do that.
Did you finish it already? Just hand it to us.
Okay.
Let Aaron do it at least.
Oh, he's trying to cheat off.
So,
a lot of cheating in here.
Yeah. But a good match. Good match. Your time. They did just less than, 14:10. So just slightly less than the tag, but still great. And it was an exceptional match. Everybody worked hard, but I was kind of perplexed that the Bulldogs didn't win either. What do you think, Jen?
I think that Bobby looks like Barney Rubble.
Now, see, Bobby
Rubble.
We love you, Bobby. Barney Rubble to me actually. Now that's a tunic, right?
Right. Okay. But maybe like the as a child, like a grown, like maybe Bam Bam is who I'm thinking of, like his kid. Is that right? I don't know. Anyway, he looks like he's from the Flintstones.
Yes.
Yes, and then why are the British Bulldogs wearing the white pants under their tights? It looks really stupid. I don't like it at all.
Short tights, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because like I've mentioned this on another podcast, but Davy Boy Smith has a very beautiful bubble butt. So, like, why not showcase that? Hmm. And the white just takes away from it.
It helps him break the Phil Nelson's Warlord with that ass.
Right, obviously. That being said, I did love Bobby, all of his trickery and dickery with the rope and the cheating and being scared of Coco in the beginning. It was all just really good stuff that I like to see. Let's see. I love how the crowd reacts to Heenan. Like, they just fucking hate him, and he just eats it up. It's beautiful. I like Davy Boy quite a bit. He flips all over. He looks awesome. Someone mentioned that he might have been a little manic at this point to me when I was talking to somebody about this show, so I wondered about that quite a bit. But yeah, I liked it. I said 3 stars.
All right.
3 stars. Very good. Mm-hmm. All right, so there we go. This match, JR, is not 3 stars. Maybe Pete would make it 3 stars.
No. God. All right. Our next match, another guy who I'm all set with for a while, and that's Iron Mike Sharp taking on old Jerry Allen. Things are going well, but here we go. Ken talks about all the youth filling up the Dirty F and lumps Allen in on that, which seems unfounded. We start with some basic trading of holds and a bit of stalling by Sharp. They work through a trainee match for a bit, all real basic. Ken says Sharp will be eating his supper off the mantelpiece for a few days. Whatever the fuck that means. After an atomic drop, Sharp takes over and chokes and slugs away for a bit. Allen mounts a comeback, but Sharp cuts him off with his forearm braces. Kent randomly says, "Et tu, Brute?" You think he should say that? You think he meant to say it like in the beefcake match and forgot? And he just is like, "I have to say it. It's in my notes, so I'm just gonna say it here."
Yes, I think he did. To be honest,
"Et tu, Brute?" You don't have Davey Boy Smith's bubble butts. Allen lands a weak dropkick and then kicks away. Kent is now randomly name-dropping people while also talking about all the photographers at ringside. Allen misses a body block off the middle rope. Sharp drops an elbow for the win. This simply existed. Nothing more, nothing left. Weird finish. Complete time killer. It makes you wonder if there was supposed to be something else here and they just roll these guys out. Because this is something you'd normally, if they were going to have it, it's like in that post-intermission slot. So it being here was real weird. I mean, I guess maybe they're trying to get Allen over a bit, but I don't know. I thought the whole thing was odd. Half a star, Jenny.
Welp. I know I'm very, very new to this, but I had no clue who these fucks were. I'm like, okay, that's fine. Never heard of you guys before. And the whole crowd just went to the bathroom. Like, there was nobody watching any of this. So I guess that's a good thing. Sharp just, like, kind of yells the whole time. Randomly, I don't know, out of frustration or like boredom in his own match. I don't know. I felt bad for the photographer who had to take pictures of it the whole time. Like, I'm sure he was questioning his life choices at that point. Like, how did I end up here doing this? Because it was kind of boring and dumb. Half a star.
You didn't enjoy Mike Sharp's grunting?
No, I didn't.
You
know,
like the noises he makes?
Not him, no.
Oh, okay.
Would he look better in a tunic?
That's Scott, I think you should wear a tunic Saturday at St. Mary's.
I am not wearing a tunic.
You should just own it. Just go for it. What if I get you one that's like an Italian flag?
Italian flag tunic? God. All right. On that note... that nobody needed to think of. Why don't we take a break?
That's it? You got nothing to say about that now? Or you're
I have nothing to say. What am I supposed to say about that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's your boy from New Haven. I thought you might have something.
Oh, Jerry Allen? Yeah, he's fine. The match is fine.
Cut your mom's
not
grass,
much to man. Say. 6:26 your time. But I agree with you. I think this was a placeholder slot here. I have a feeling something else was supposed to be here. But because I would have put this match probably after the next one and not before the next one.
Right.
But... in any event, 6:26, and we're done with this. So, for your first foray, Jenny, what do you think? Into the garden so far?
Mixed. Like, there's a little bit of the camp that I like, and then there's a little bit of actual good stuff that I like. So we'll just see how the rest plays out.
All right.
Very diplomatic. I like that.
We'll see how it plays out. Indeed. Why don't we take a break, Ski? When we come back, we will wrap this show up. How about that? And we actually will dive into a pretty big deal that launched at PlaceNation.com today. So we'll talk about that, too. After this break, we'll be right back.
Yes.
Call me now.
Because.
Consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back after all. he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place B Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceBNation.com. We offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place B Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, along with Main Event, Survey Says, the Monday Night Wars, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, as well as Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver special network podcasts and pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Match of the Week podcast, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Through the Years, Worldcast, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Center Stage, and Letters from Kayfabe, plus much more. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as Talking Pop, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, NBA Team, PTBN Play, Sunday Groove, Breaking Balls, and Lucha Undead,
as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans
with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and Marvel Age Podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback today. All these shows, plus others, available at PlaceBNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceBNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceBNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
Fourth pack is back, cause I'm mass destruction. Guess you see it, the bad boys are wrestling. Just in competition when the war does the mission.
Anything for you, though you're not here. Since you said we're through, it seems like years. Time keeps dragging on and on, and forever's been and gone. Still I can't figure what went wrong. I'd still do anything for you. I'll play your game. You hurt me through and through.
All right, Nation, welcome back. Myself, Scott Criscolo, Jennifer Smith, balls deep into the May 88 Madison Square Garden. And, you know, Scott, during the break, he whispered in my ear. He said, you know what? I want that fucking Italian flag tunic. I want it so bad. I want to wear it. Nothing else under it. And I said, Scott, I looked you in the eye. I said, Jeffrey Scott, I said, anything for you, my friend. Anything for you. I will make you that tunic. And speaking of anything for you, that is a song playing underneath us tonight, the number one song in the country this week, Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine. A little bit more formidable than the Miami Dolphins these days. And that is the number one song in the country. And that leads us into the Pop Culture Corner with Scott Criscolo. Scotland, how are you?
Thank you. Thank you, JR. And yes, indeed, the Dolphins not as good as Miss Estefan. And Anything for You is the number one song in the country. At number two, One More Try by Mr. George Michael, as he was obviously edging out into
filling the sound machine. The greatness sports machine is what I meant to say.
The sports machine. No, the sports. Yes, the sports machine. Johnny H. Jazz with Shattered Dreams. At number four, the Pet Shop Boys with their remake of Always on My Mind. Of course, it was first done by Willie Nelson, and then the Pet Shop Boys remade it. Number five, Little Samantha Fox. Naughty Girls Need Love Too. Might be the new Geek and Sassy theme soon.
I like it.
I know. I think that when you do your anniversary episode, that's when you change the theme. Mm-hmm. At number six, I Don't Want to Live Without You by Foreigner. Number seven, Electric Blue by Icehouse. No, they had a song in 1988. Wait by White Lion.
It's going to be better than the beer, that's for sure.
Yes, yes, very much so. At number nine, number eight, Wait by White Lion. It's a big late 80s hair band cut. Number nine, Everything Your Heart Desires by Hall & Oates. And this was like late 80s when Hall & Oates was kind of trying to make the comeback and didn't quite work. And at number 10, Two Occasions by The Deal. I've never even heard of that song. It's kind of strange. So there you go. There's your top 10. And that came out the previous Saturday, May 21st, 1988. And, of course, the following day, since this house show occurred on a Friday, the next day, the 28th, would be a fresh top 10. But Gloria Estefan at number one with Anything for You. And speaking of the 80s music, JR, why don't you tell us, why don't you tell everyone what's been fired up on PlacementNation.com?
At PlacementNation.com, we did kick off our new tournament, Scott. It's kind of fitting, World Cup time. I think that's when we did the 90s one a few years back. And this new tournament is the greatest song of the 80s, mirroring the 90s tournament we did. There are 650 songs from the 1980s, and I'll tell you, all of them are bangers. So I'm not going to lie. We're doing this pool style, as always, like we do. So each pool that goes up each day will have 10 songs for round one. You'll be picking five of them. We're going to be posting three a day. So make sure you vote in all three each day. Should be up around 10 a.m. every day. Inside the post, we have all the videos. And as you know, for the 80s, like, the videos are some of the best part, like watching these things. So be sure, like, for every song that had a video, the video's in here. So be sure to watch those. And yeah, we know it's a lot of songs, and we know that 630 of them aren't likely to win, but it's about the journey. Enjoy the journey, watch the videos, relive the memories, get into the discussion. We had some great discussion in our live chats group, on our Facebook pages, on Twitter, going on today when this kicked off. So what I thought we could do today, guys, is I did vote at work, but on my home computer, it's a brand new entry form here for me today. No cookies kicking me out. So I thought we could do choose five as a group here tonight for these three groups, pools that are posted. How's that sound? Delightful to everyone?
Let's do it.
Of course.
Okay. Pool round one, group A. We have Back in the High Life by Steve Winwood, Heart in My Heart by Quarterflash, It's My Life by Talk Talk, Think of Laura by the one and only Christopher Cross, Poison by Alice Cooper, The End of the World as We Know It by R.E.M., I'm Still Standing by Elton John, What a Feeling by Irene Cara, New Love by Jody Watley, and Fight the Power by the Public Enemy. All right. Jenny, if you had to pick one, just one that you could choose, what's yours?
Steve Winwood.
Very good. And, of course, that's epic just from the episode of It's Always Sunny when they're on the yacht and Anything Can Happen, and that's the song Dennis keeps playing. Scott, anyone that you would move on just without even question?
I'm Still Standing, Elton.
Yes, that's a must. Okay. Are you on board with Mr. Winwood going on, Scott?
Absolutely. Tremendous song.
All right. I think R.E.M. Has to go. That's a pretty quintessential 80s song.
Yes.
Everyone good with that?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. If I had to pick another one, I would think it's What a Feeling. To me,
yes,
that's another big 80s song.
Yep.
And then
epic
I think
movie,
the last
song.
One is I think
Public
it's up
Enemy.
For grabs. Yeah. Public Enemy is going to be my pick. It's a pretty big one.
I pick Public Enemy, too.
All right, so we're going to vote those, and let's see where we stand now. Wow, we got a decent amount of votes here on day one. All right, four of our top five are in. Steve Winwood is two back of Poison by Alice Cooper. So it's a tight race for fifth. The other four are pretty much comfortably in. So there you go. Let's move on to Group B. Pull that up. All right, so Group B, we have I Want to Know What Love Is by Foreigner, Listen to Your Heart by Roxette, Walk This Way, Run DMC with Aerosmith, What I Like About You, The Romantics, Let's Go All the Way by Sly Fox, The Longest Time by Scott's homeboy, Billy Joel, Space Age Love Song by Flock of Seagulls, Close My Eyes Forever by Ozzy Osbourne and Lita Ford, Hysteria by Def Leppard, and Too Shy by Kaja Gugu. All right, Jenny, what's your one that must go on?
Oh, my God. It's got to be
Def
Leppard. Hysteria is fucking tremendous. I love that song.
All right, Scott?
Longest Time, of course.
All right, Foreigner has to go. That's a key song.
Yes. Yep.
I think – all right, so here's what I would narrow down this last two. You got Too Shy, Listen to Your Heart, Walk This Way, and What I Like About You. Like, to me, the two of those four, those are the four we got to talk about.
What I Like About You.
Yeah, those are that and Walk This Way would be my two.
Yeah.
What do you think, Scott?
Too Shy, such an epic one-hit wonder.
Yeah, well, it
too.
Should be in over fucking longest time, and that's what we're doing. So fuck you, Billy. There's better Billy 80 songs than that one.
There's plenty of better Billy 80 songs.
So we're leaving that one out. We're going Too Shy. And then we're doing Walk This Way and What I Like About You. So it should be sad. Show should be done. All right. So four of our five are in. And actually, Roxette is in above Longest Time and Too Shy. So What I Like About You is in fifth. That is six above Billy and seven above Kaja. So that's the tight race there. And actually, Listen to Your Heart is at 51 and Hysteria is only at 53. So it's a tight race. Those bottom, the top two are in comfortably.
That's a tough pool right there.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, if you put these together, it's like you see these and you're like, God damn, this is like, there's so many loaded. Wait till you see some of these groups that are coming. They're just ridiculously stacked. All right, finally, Group C, real quick. Sarah by Starship, Nikki by Tony Basil, Goody Two Shoes by Adam Ant, Wanted Dead or Alive by Bon Jovi, Hearts on Fire by John Cafferty, Talking in Your Sleep by The Romantics, Don't Tell Me You Love Me by Night Ranger, Sweet Dreams Are Made of This by The Eurythmics, I Knew You Were Waiting for Me, Aretha Franklin, and George Michael, and Man Eater by Hall & Oates. Jenny, your choice.
Oh, fuck. I got to go Bon Jovi.
Yeah, right. That's a gimme.
Scott?
Yep.
Oh, Man Eater, easily.
Yeah. Good. I think Hearts on Fire has to go. It's from one of the best 80s camp movies, Rocky IV, one of the just all-time great training scenes, and I don't care what anyone says. Mm-hmm. And then if I had to pick, my other one would be The Romantics, Talking in Your Sleep, and I don't
Mickey.
Know. Yeah, I guess Mickey has to go, but I'm not a big fan of Mickey. But whatever, I get why it has to advance. Any other one, Scott, you're thinking of?
I can't see both Romantics songs, because the other one's just so much better than that one. I kind of like Don't Tell Me You Love Me by Night Ranger. I always thought that was a good, fun song. I just can't stand that other romantic song. I can't see both moving on, but if you put it in, that's fine. But I like the Night Ranger song, actually.
Okay. And what do you think of Mickey?
I like Mickey. It's another one of those one hit. It's like Too Shy. It's another one of those one hit wonders you can't forget. Once it comes on, you can't get it out of your head, whether you like it or not.
All right. This group seems pretty settled. With Talking in Your Sleep just is 10 back of the fifth spot. The only one that's in that we didn't have is Sweet Dreams Are Made of This by the Eurythmics. Hearts on Fire has a 10 vote lead on Talking in Your Sleep. So now listen, if you voted, now there is a little bit of difference here between Group A and C. Make sure you're catching all of these. Don't think I tried to link them all in the post and everything else. So be sure if you're voting, you're getting to all of them. It looks like A has, more than B and C. So I just want to make sure that you're seeing all of them when you're going into vote. So get on that. All right, PlayStation.com has a lot of other stuff going on. We will be having, of course, our pay-per-view recap, where all members of the staff each pick a match and recap last night's Extreme Rules. Check that out. Jenny, you had a brand new Geek and Sassy. I guess we can cover that later in our plugs. Hey, we'll talk about all the podcasts later in the plugs. Just check out PlayStation.com each and every day. Some of the writing content is really ramped up. We have some great new writers on board. We'll have a new Stacey O'Loughlin piece coming this week as well, as she does her Diva Deep Dive. And plenty more every day. And this tournament will continue every day. So we'll talk more about our podcast plugs later. Scott, why don't you take us back into the Pop Culture Corner?
All righty. Well, it was fitting on this evening that Jenny would be here, because our one movie, JR, is actually one of the more memorable horror movies, as Jenny and I both are fans of, of the 80s. And maybe not like – I mean, we're not talking – Friday the 13th or Nightmare or Halloween level in terms of quality, but just in terms of camp and just utter nonsense. Coming out on this evening, JR, the same night as this house show, was Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Indeed.
I prefer the Biker Dudes from Heck, but that's just me.
I can't wait for you to read this.
Just outside of the town of Crescent Cove, Mike DeBacco and his girlfriend Debbie Lucy are parked with other couples at local Lover's Lane when they spot a strange glowing object falling to Earth. Nearby farmer Gene Green also spies the object, believing it to be Halley's Comet. He ventures to the woods to find the impact site, the impact zone. Instead, stumbles onto a large circus tent-like structure, and he and his dogs are abruptly captured by mysterious clown-like aliens, the Clowns with a K. Shortly thereafter, Mike and Debbie arrive to investigate for themselves. Entering the structure, they discover a complex interior with elevators and bizarre rooms. They soon find Green encased in a cotton candy-like cocoon, spotted by a clown who shoots popcorn at them from a large gun. The couple flees, pursued by a group of clowns and a balloon animal dog that, of course, comes to life. Starring Grant Kramer, Suzanne Snyder, John Alan Nelson, John Vernon, and a bunch of fucking other morons. Christopher Titus. All right, go ahead, you two. Talk about it so I can take a nap.
I love this movie so much.
Yeah.
Tremendous.
It's so fucking gross and ridiculous and stupid and wonderful, and I love it. I think it's on Shudder, so I'm going to watch it this week.
Oh, tremendous. We need to do – we need to, like, talk to Amazon, Jenny, because I don't – unless they – unless they've added it, but I don't think Amazon Fire Stick has Shudder as an app.
Well, that's –
I had it on – because I had it on Roku. Mm-hmm. When I had my Roku, I had Shudder. And that's when I first – for the first time since I remember renting it is when you mentioned Sleepaway Camp the other day. Mm-hmm. And that ridiculously strange ending, which might be one of the coolest horror endings of all time. For anybody that doesn't know that movie, watch it, and then the ending will you'll lose your mind. It's probably better than any finish. It's probably better than any of the other big three. But Killer Clowns is just one of those odd ones that had, like, no budget. It actually – it cost – how much do you think it cost to make?
Oh, my God.
Too much.
$50,000.
I know, right? $1.8 million.
Holy
I wonder who
shit.
Paid for that. I wonder where all that money went. The makeup?
Gotta be. I think it's credited to like most people's fear of clowns at this point, right?
Yes.
Like,
I think even more than It, because this
yeah,
came out two
definitely.
Years before It. So, and I mean, we gotta have an It discussion because,
yeah.
You know, I mean, Tim Curry, he's tremendous. Mm-hmm. But the new one has its advantages, too. Okay. Anyway, that was the one movie that came out on this day in 1988. All right. Major League Baseball, it was a Friday night, so, of course, all the teams were in action. Are you partial to the Braves, Jenny, or do you not care?
I am partial to the Braves. Okay. How would you know that?
Big
Is
shot.
Is it because I'm a Southerner?
Yeah, pretty much.
All right. That's fair.
Geographically, who else would I pick?
Right.
There were no
You're
Rays
right.
or Marlins yet, so. Anyway, speaking of the Braves, and they were not very good in 1988. what did they do on this day? The Braves, where are they? Braves. They lost 5-2 to the Cardinals. The Yankees were in Seattle, and they beat the Mariners by the score of 5-1, while the Mets at home lost to San Diego 2-0. And for the first time I think ever, probably hasn't, it definitely hasn't happened since, the Mets and the Yankees actually had the same record. They were both 31-14, and they were both in first place in their divisions. The Yankees were a game and a half ahead of Cleveland. The Mets were 4.5 ahead of the Pirates. Oakland had the best record in baseball at 32-14. And the Dodgers were leading the West at 26-17. There was one NBA playoff game. It was at Reunion Arena in Dallas. The Mavericks beat the Lakers 106-94. Lakers led the Western Conference Finals 2-0. Celtics and Pistons were off. They were in the Eastern Conference Finals. And the NHL season was over. You don't have to worry, JR, about Peter Winston and I talking about the Bruins because the Oilers swept them in the Stanley Cup Finals that year. So another cup. In fact, the final cup as an Oiler for Mr. Wayne Gretzky, because that this – well, maybe we'll talk about it when it gets there, but a big event happened that summer that shifted a lot of things, not only in hockey but in sports on the West Coast. We'll talk more about that when we get there in the summertime.
Speaking of things shifting, Mickey James.
Go.
Machi.
Yes. All right. There's your pop culture report. Back to the garden.
Bobby Heenan walks out, says he's on a roll. He's 2-0, wants to continue in the ring and put his name on an open contract for any opponent. And that brings us to our nominal main event of the evening, and that is the Macho Man Randy Savage defending the World Heavyweight Championship against the Million Dollar Man Ted DiBiase. The rematch from last month and from WrestleMania, DiBiase and Virgil march out to booze. The crowd is ready for this one. They are here for it. Savage and Liz get a mega pop as they hit the ring. Savage comes in on fire, mows through Ted before he even gets his robe and belt off. Ted begs off as Savage just is a fucking maniac. Savage keeps mauling the challenger with rabid offense, and the crowd is feeding off it. Virgil gets in the mix, distracts Savage, but Macho fends him off and stays on top where he likes it. DiBiase lands a stiff shot, was able to sling Savage to the floor to catch a breather. Ted stomps away in place of the crowd and then lands a tight back elbow and chokes away. Challenger keeps control for a bit, peppering the champ and grabbing near falls, including one off a nasty pile driver. Kent says Liz is a very pretty girl who is worried. Savage drills Ted coming off the middle rope and makes a comeback. The champ unloads until Ted dodges a charge and sends Savage flying to the floor into some chairs. Graham tells Liz to act like a manager out there. As Ted follows out, keeps the pressure on in and out of the ring. Ted is really aggressive with his attack, pummeling the champion. Liz ties up the ref as the buckle pad gets removed and Savage slings DiBiase into it. Savage recovers first from the ensuing collision and covers, but Virgil dives in the ring and breaks up the pin to draw the DQ. The crowd is just losing their shit as DiBiase and Virgil beat down the champ, and they leave as Savage hoists Liz on his shoulder, and then, in a great moment, Ted and Virgil come back and attack again from behind, just drilling Savage with Liz on his shoulder, and Savage gets left as a crumpled mess. Really damn good again, right on par with April. These two continue to have such great chemistry and flow in the ring. DiBiase dominated the match and showed off some newer offense, and Savage's selling was just on point. And the crowd was on fire, too. And this is a red-hot feud, and again, it'll clearly continue. You know, Scott, we spent a lot of time hand-wringing the finish from last month, but I thought here, like, this is kind of maybe what we should have had there, you know? But I'll take it. I liked the finish because it keeps us going. I thought it was really well done, and I loved the match. Jenny, I went 3.5 stars. What did you have for this one?
I did, too, actually. I like how Savage just comes right the fuck in, doesn't even take his robe off, and just goes fucking crazy. I love how extra he is all the time, no matter what. And the crowd's crazy for him. And then I get to see some blood. I like blood. So when DiBiase starts gets his nose broke, apparently, he starts bleeding. So I was like, yes, this is even better. And I think Ted looks awesome. I think that this is probably a hot take, but Liz gets on my nerves. And I know everybody likes Liz. So
why does she bother you?
She bothers me because she seems so meek and timid all the time. Like every single time I've ever seen her.
You would be sure if your husband kept you locked in the closet.
Well, I guess. But I just want to, I don't know. It just makes me like, come on, lady. Like, grow some balls. I don't know. Anyway, I know that's like blasphemy. But that's how I feel. One of them, I forget which one, said something about her EAO, her emotional anxiety level.
Yes.
I thought that was so fucking random. Where does that come from? Is that a thing?
I never heard of it. I don't know.
Is that just something that he said? So anyway, I'm going to start saying that now. And yeah, it was crazy. I fucking love Savage, and he can take a beating like nobody else.
You're exactly right. I gave this 4 stars. It was tremendous. It was definitely better than last month's. And again, you know, really going deep down the wrestling rabbit hole that we are doing with our with the Vintage Vault Refresh and watching a lot of these MSG house shows and seeing matches that not many others can. Savage really embraced this role very well, and I applaud him for really not failing and really taking it to the limit. And DiBiase is just so good at what he does. He's just so good. And all this fire and all of the emotion that this storyline's had. It's like Savage is champion, but he still wants to break off DiBiase, you know? And that's what makes Savage great, is that he's still a maniac even when he's the one holding all the cards. And that's not what Hogan did, and that's why I'm kind of glad he's a different kind of champion and we have a different kind of guy than Hogan was, or is, I should say. I shouldn't say was. Is.
Mm-hmm.
Different kind of champion, different kind of way to go about it. And I think that's what's making this so much fun. And look, I understand we misquote Hogan, and I guess, you know, 2 weeks before on Superstars, he had the match with Boris Zukov, and that was kind of his farewell for the time being kind of thing. Got to be honest, I don't think, I don't want to say we don't miss him, but the show
was a good time for a
break without him. Yeah. Right. And I know what everyone's going to say, well, if Hogan was here, we wouldn't have all these fucking George Steele and Iron Mike. No,
we had him
anyway.
What do you think of, I think your Savage point's an interesting one, what he brings to the table. Do you think it was kind of shrewd for them not to go to a heel in between? because Savage is such a different kind of face, and we're getting different kind of matches and different kinds of feuds. Like, I think it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's kind of good that we didn't get the heel run in between the two. Like, I'm kind of cool that they transitioned pretty much face to face because of the difference. It's not like we went from Hogan to a guy like Hogan. You know, it's like you said, it's completely different. So I think it's a good point into how the direction they go with this. So I thought that was it was a well thought out decision to have Savage be the next guy because he is so different than Hogan.
Yeah, no, I agree. As for Liz, Jenny, you're not really the only one that's you're not on an island of that opinion.
Oh,
honestly.
Good.
It's not. I mean, it's rare, but right. It's not. You're not the only one, because a lot of times, particularly when she was a face, like when she was a heel, Savage would use her as a shield. Of course, as a face, everyone else does. So, when you try and think logically about it, yeah, she becomes a problem, and she was a problem. We'll get more into her being in the way as time progresses when we move along in our journey. But yeah, I mean. I can see people thinking that way, but the reason that she got over so much the reason that personality of hers got over so well is because she was the first woman that acted that way. Every female valet or manager to this point in wrestling history was a heel, whether it was Moolah, not counting Wendi Richter and Cyndi Lauper, that doesn't count. But I mean, like actual wrestling, like Moolah, or there was a valet in World Class in Texas. Her name was Sunshine. She managed Jimmy Garvin. Same thing. She was a heel. Precious, his wife, she was a heel. All of the female valets in other territories in the 80s were practically all heels. And I'm sure there's a babyface I'm not thinking of, but there weren't many. I mean, Sensational Sherry, who's a wrestler here, she was managing and wrestling in the AWA. Mm-hmm. So the reason that she was so unique is because you never saw a valet like that before, a kind of gentle, kind of, you know, doll-like valet who just the fans dug because she wasn't this crazed lunatic like he was, you know? So she was a good yin to his yang in their pair.
I suppose that makes sense. I could see that.
But I mean, you as a newer fan, you're used to kind of the women now that are a lot more, you know, particularly who actually wrestle that mm-hmm. don't have this kind of personality. So I can understand you're kind of not thinking that it makes any sense. But at the time, there were a lot of valets weren't like that. They were like you would see now, you know, like a Alexa Bliss or something like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So I could see how you being kind of put off by that because you're not used to it. But even back then you weren't used to it because valets all around the territories back then were heels too. But the match itself is fantastic. I love DiBiase. Settles right in as a tremendous heel. I think he has more chemistry with Savage than he does with Hogan. This is one guy that's kind of Savage's guy, and that's good. You know what I mean? This is actually more organic for Savage because, you know, Savage is the one that wants to take out DiBiase, even though he's got the thing DiBiase wants. The dynamic is so unique that it makes for, I think, great matches and great storytelling. And that's why I think they have great chemistry together. So I think it's my first 4-star MSG match in a while, but it was that good. It was definitely better than WrestleMania 4, and I thought it was better than the match in April. So, and I know we see them again down the line. We'll see if it matches that, but pretty good. Pretty good. Again, 4 stars, and everybody succeeded. Our next match will not have 4 stars, most likely.
A little different on paper, not. This one is.
Yes.
Quite the power match. Yep. As we have Don Morocco, The Rock, taking on Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Interesting power match. True test of Morocco's face. Neidhart gets his singles duties. Of course, Brett's been busy. Graham comes out with Morocco, so Al hops in the booth with Roger Kent. We get some feeling out and some heavy blows to a stalemate and a pretty neat open. Anvil lands an elbow and takes right over with clubbing offense. Morocco tries to charge but eats a knee. Anvil chokes and hammers away. Morocco makes a quick comeback with a slam and a crossbody for 2, and then follows with a clothesline and dropkick. Morocco tries for a sunset flip. Neidhart stumbles back and sits on his chest in a real awkward pin cover and takes the win. The two bulls brawl after that. Real odd looking finish. I think it was fucked up. I think Anvil was supposed to grab the tights or the rope, and he kind of fumbled and couldn't do either. So we just got to get this awkward thing where he's just kind of sitting on him. I thought it was a fine power match. While it lasted, there really wasn't much to it. I was a little surprised that Morocco lost too, the way he's been booked of late. But I don't know. I guess they're trying to keep Anvil strong while the hearts aren't together. I have no idea. But the finish to me, Scott, definitely looked like they fucked something up.
They definitely fucked something up. It definitely came
out. I went one star on this, by the way. I don't know if I said that.
Your time, by the way, the DiBiase Savage length was 11:55. This was 6:22. Yeah, they definitely blew something here. I went a star as well. By the way, Superstar Billy Graham, again, as you said, JR, came out, and so Alfred came out with Roger Kent, which still makes me wonder why he – maybe they really thought that Graham would be a good guy in the booth. I don't know. I didn't think he would be, even just based on him. You know what I mean? So I don't know. It was very I don't know. We can talk about this as time progresses, because we'll obviously – this is the last time we'll deal with him. So Alfred was there. I still don't know why we didn't have any backstage interviews. It was very strange. I thought this – I was actually kind of looking forward to this match. I thought it would be kind of a unique power thing, and you know, you and I are kind of on a big Morocco kick right now. Although when Roger Kent said at the beginning, the Rock Don Morocco did not have that physique 10 years ago, I just literally laughed out loud at my desk today. I'm like, no shit, he didn't. I was like, and that's because, and then what is, I think it was Alfred that said it. He looks this good because of the tutorials of Billy Graham. Yeah, that's not the only thing. I thought that was pretty funny. Yeah, something fumbled at the end. Maybe Morocco was meant to win and they just had to have Neidhart win to cover up the screw up.
I think Anvil was going to win. I think he was supposed to like sit on him and hold the ropes to sit down. You know, I mean, like some kind of leverage, like or reach back and hook the tights. I don't know. So it looked like something like that to me.
Yeah, it's something. Yeah, something botched, because I don't know why you would give a shit about Anvil winning anything, particularly since you know things are on the horizon for both him and the Hitman down the line. But not needing a win here wasn't part of the equation. I mean, I would have kept, I mean, Morocco actually is pretty strong upper mid card guy right now. And I don't know why you would have him job here. Very strange. Again, I gave it a star, Jenny. And, what'd you think of these two behemoths?
Well, I feel pretty smart because, I also was like at the end, something just got fucked up cause that looked really wrong. And, it was kind of silly. Not particularly interesting. I did like the kind of brawl at the end. I mean, not much to say, honestly. One star.
Yeah, that about sums it up. Again, I was sad. You know, I've been a Morocco mark since the face turn, so I was a little surprised again. This felt like a match I was actually shocked that they didn't do some kind of double count out with. This is one I would have expected that for. But again, the fucked up finish kind of hurts it a bit. All right, let's get to our next match. More power action as Kenny Patera takes on Dino Bravo. Of course, this is the blow-off after last month's arm wrestling fiasco between the two. Billy Graham's back, replacing Lord Al in the booth. Frenchie's dumbass is back this month with Dino. He lumbers out to booze. Patera gets a warm welcome as he jogs to the ring and chases Dino to the floor. Dino returns. Patera runs right through him, sends him back out. Patera grabs a Phil Nelson, but Dino forces the break. Kenny keeps up the heat, peppering away at Bravo with heavy strikes. But Patera eventually whiffs on a charge and slams into the post shoulder first. Bravo follows with a stiff pile driver as Kent says Ken is out to lunch. Patera fires up and tries for a second monkey flip, but Bravo blocks it with an inverted atomic drop and goes to a neck vice. Patera ends up back outside where Frenchie lands a shot in, followed by Bravo, who comes out and clobbers Ken. Patera slides in and blocks an atomic drop, unloads some offense, and picks up a few near falls along the way. Ken keeps pounding and tries for the full Nelson, but Bravo dives to the ropes. Frenchie gets up and ties up Ken until Bravo drills him from behind and gets a side suplex for the win. Fine little power match, I thought. I actually kind of dug it a little bit. Had good flow, and I thought it was really Ken's energy that carried it. But Tara has somehow, through all this, carried Bravo to decent stuff with the arm wrestling and this. And I thought the finish was fine, too, with Bravo cheating to win. So I went 2 stars on this one. I think Patera's starting to slide into my Morocco bucket of in Hercules bucket of guys that I've been kind of silently impressed with. You know, Scott, we bagged on him a lot in when he hit the, you know, these back of the day, but watching him work matches like this, I've actually come to appreciate his energy and what he brings to the table a bit more than I had. So that speaks to it. But Jenny, I went 2 stars on this. What'd you think of this one?
I said 1.5. I think by this point in the show, I was really feeling the time. Like, mm-hmm. It's not that long of a show, but I'm like, okay, I've been doing this for a while. So it was, I was getting fatigued. And then there was Frenchie Martin. So that was kind of the, I liked the pacing. It wasn't boring. So mm-hmm. that was good. I liked when Dino tried to run away, just like, fuck this shit, I'm not doing this. And then, and then he gets talked back into the ring. Right. So that's kind of a little bit of the comedy that got me up to the 1.5 star. And I like the ending.
I gave this 1.5 stars. The funny thing is, JR, we talk about Patera as a worker, and it was really never that he was a lousy I mean, he just looks like a weirdo with his weird hair and the weird hairless legs and that arm mechanic thing he had on when he hurt his arm. Like, he just looked odd, but we always knew it. And listen, I'm watching a lot of these 79-80 All-Star Wrestlings on the network when he was just getting up, and he was always a decent power guy, and this was kind of a Herculean effort, as you mentioned, Hercules, to take on a guy like Bravo, who has like zero ability whatsoever. And there's another guy who lost all his ability, because, I mean, again, watching some of his older stuff in like 78 when he was in the WWF, and then to look this now, and you're like, I don't know what the hell happened to him, but oh, I do know what happened to him. But he went to the same training as Billy Graham in Morocco did. But he was just very different now, in terms of kind of being very mature, meaning Patera. And yeah, I'm pleasantly surprised. I mean, I'm still more surprised at Morocco and Hercules that they've just gotten better. I wouldn't say that that Patera is like a world beater, mm-hmm. but he did take a guy like Bravo, who's, you know, literally goo, and to give him a star and a half is pretty impressive. Your match time, I don't know how long these guys got, 7:15. And it was fine. They definitely worked the circuit as best as they could. But this is what Vince had in the middle of the roster. He had all these big, kind of big dudes, power guys, variety of times in their careers, guys over the hill, guys just coming up, guys in their prime. And he was trying to work them as best he could. And I thought that if you're asking me between these two matches, I thought Morocco and Neidhart was actually better, believe it or not. But this was not terrible. And
I like this better.
You know, but to me, really? Patera has definitely did not slack off in this comeback. I mean, he definitely worked. He just looks weird with the hair and the weird legs and everything. But he definitely didn't slack off when he came back. And Bravo obviously has, you know, more over, obviously, or he's being booked better, so that's why he won. But, yeah, Frenchie's a schlub. I don't know. I'm in that camp with you guys now. He's useless. He's still better than – I mean, he's not better than Mr. Fuji, and I know JR is a big fan of him too. But at least Fuji's got some cred as a legit wrestler, whereas, you know, Frenchie was a jobber before he became a manager. So, yeah, the match is fine. Served its purpose. And the right guy won, unfortunately, because Bravo's more over right now. So, when we get to the end, JR, the Fink comes out, doesn't he?
He does. He runs on next month's card and has a big announcement as part of it. It says, Bobby Heenan's open challenge has been filled by the Ultimate Warrior. Crowd goes nuts. Bobby runs out all pissed off and starts arguing with Fink. So, pretty big announcement there for next month, as the Ultimate Warrior will take on Bobby. We'll see if Bobby's big winning streak will continue. That brings us to our final match of the night, which is a very random one, is the Junkyard Dog takes on the Outlaw Ron Bass. JYD, another one of those guys that's moldy, still hanging around, lingering on the card. And Bass hasn't really done much of late. We haven't seen too much of him. Bass attacks at the bell, kicks away, but Dog fends him off and threatens him with his chain. Kent says Bass's whip is called Miss Becky, and Graham, of course, corrects him to Miss Betsy. Bass returns, and did I fuck that up? It's Betsy, right? Not Betty. No, I'm questioning myself. Miss Betsy, right, Scott?
The whip, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yes, Bass returns and eats a headbutt, and then JYD crawls around and pushes Bass all the way to the corner and out to the floor. Bass comes back in. We get a test of strength. Bass takes over and works the back with a submission hold. The JYD breaks free but comes up empty on a charge to the corner. Bass keeps control, slows things down, and works a chin lock. JYD bows up. But Bass cuts him right down with a clothesline. Bass slams JYD, and JYD rolls Bass over and takes the win and then just walks away. A real shitty final match. Nothing happening. Just completely boring and flat, and took the steam out of what was kind of a hot show. I honestly end up knocking the whole show grade down a touch because of this. The way we close things out is just real fucking bad. I mean, this was just not good. I went 0.5 star because there's like a glimmer here and there. But overall, just not very entertaining and just kind of messy. And Dog is just another guy that needs to go. Put him in the steel pile, and everyone else is just all these dudes just lingering around, taking up space, doing nothing. I mean, there's a bunch of other matches. Even Bravo Patero would have been a better way to close than this random slop fest between these two bums. What do you think, Scott?
I gave this 0.5 star. I think their point here was, and I've kind of tore into him a little bit over the last 6-7 months of stuff, but I mean, it's obvious that JYD's time is up, but I think for this night, maybe they thought that they could get, you know, one pop out of him to end the show, because, you know, the crowd still kind of loves him even though his ability is pretty much gone. I gotta be honest, I probably would have had Bass win, but that didn't happen. The match is garbage. Your runtime is 8:15, so a minute longer than Bravo and Kenny. Probably should have done them in reverse. But JYD has nothing left. His tank's empty. It's sad, too, because, I mean, just 3 years ago, he was probably like the number 2 baby face in the company, and now he's probably like the number like 9 baby face in the company, and that might be generous. And the match is just not good. He's out of shape, and I mean, Ron Bass is a decent power guy, but, I mean, he needs some help, a little bit of help, and JYD wasn't going to give it to him. So the show just kind of end on a clunker because I think you were expecting more out of it than it was. But, oh, well. What'd you think, Jenny?
I'm with you guys. 0.5 star. The crowd actually seemed to like JYD quite a bit, and I didn't know why. I guess, is that nostalgia or something?
I guess.
Yeah,
I liked his headbutts. I thought that looked pretty hard. But one of my notes says, ready to be done with this. So I think the crowd kind of felt that way a little bit, too, because you just see people just leaving in the background.
Yeah, they clearly like, all right, this is going nowhere.
Yeah, it was like, let's beat the traffic, honey, and they're just leaving. It just kind of... just not a good ending. No, I did not enjoy it very much at all.
All right. Rough. Well, that's a depressing way to end the show, but that's what happened.
Kind of is. Yeah.
All right. So why don't we get to our awards here tonight? And Jennifer, I'm sure you're prepared for all these.
I am. Yes, sir.
I'm not a girl. All right. Let's start with our match of the night. I think easy choice here for me. Anyway, I don't know if you all agree. And that was Randy Savage versus Ted DiBiase.
Oh, clearly.
Agreed.
All right. Well, since WrestleMania 4, actually since Saturday's main event, Scott, we've had some mix of Savage DiBiase, you and Peter there, and then WrestleMania 4, Savage DiBiase, April, Savage DiBiase, Saturday's main event, Savage Gang, and here, Savage DiBiase. So Savage as main eventer has really worked well when you look at a match quality point of view. Uh-huh. All right. Our worst match of the night to me was another very easy choice, and that was a slugfest between slopfest between Greg Valentine and George Steele.
Poor Valentine. He doesn't deserve to be in this column, but he's collateral damage.
Jenny, do you agree or no?
Yep, Valentine and Steel.
All right, Hogan Award for the MVP of the night. I always feel cheap like doing the split, but I really think Savage and DiBiase co-owned this one. It was their show. The match was great. The attack was great. Like, it was the two of them were just awesome on this night.
You know what? I was kind of feeling Bobby quite a bit.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's a good one, too.
Because outside of the match, he had those, you know, two spots in the ring, and he would call the crowd humanoids. And then after he found out he had to fight the Ultimate Warrior, he said, "I'm not a weasel, I'm a human being." It cracked me up. He's just so, like, so fun to hate.
It's the tunic.
Yeah, gotta be.
Incredible tune.
Who'd you have, Scott?
I agree with you on Savage DiBiase. I mean, the match was fantastic.
All right.
And they're both fantastic.
Our Uncle Elmer for the worst work of the night, to me, another easy choice for George Steele. Worthless as he is.
Yep.
Agreed.
All right. Uncle Elmer Award. I'm sorry. Wait. I fucked that up.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Where the hell am I? I'm pacing this all over the place.
Best moment, friend.
Best moment was, to me, DiBiase and Virgil attacking Savage while he was celebrating at the end. I loved when they ran back in and knocked him over while he was holding up Liz and just laid the boots to him.
I like the beginning of the match when Savage just fucking runs and just starts and just clobbers him, knocks him with the belt. It was awesome.
Scott?
Yeah, I agree.
Which one?
On Jenny's. I kind of like the belt thing, too. It's just Savage's unpredictability.
Yeah.
And that's, yeah, I dig that. I got to go with that one.
Okay. All right, the Muraco Award for the most juiced up of the night, and the man himself was on the card, so it's an easy choice for me, Donnie Boy.
Let's see. One, two, three, four, five, six, eight. 8 wins in the last, what, like 12 shows?
Yeah, he's won every one that he's on. So,
yep.
Dino was right up there with him. But yeah.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't far off. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Ken Patera was on the show. So easy choice usually for Patera Award. But I do want to give a shout-out, honorable mention to Siviafi, whose hair was just as fucking bad, I thought, on the side. But when Patera's on, he's going to win. He's like Morocco. It's his award.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And my shout-out goes to One Man Gang.
Okay. All right. Overall grade. I liked this show. I thought there was, you know, a bunch of solid stuff on it. Savage DiBiase was very good. We had the 6-man. That was fun. And then a couple other solid matches as well. The last match, even though it was short, really took some of the steam out for me. And we did have a bunch of other crap proliferate this card. So I was sitting around a 6, but with the end being as soft as it was after Savage DiBiase, That knocked it down a bit for me. So I ended up going 5.5.
I'm going to say 5. Right down the middle for me.
Scott?
Yeah, I'm going to go 5 as well. I mean, the bad stuff was... It was kind of like the same thing as we had last month, JR. I mean, the bad stuff was really bad, and the good stuff was tremendous.
Yeah.
So there really was nothing in the middle. So
yeah, and our grades are pretty much in line with that April one with Kelly as well. So
yeah.
All right, there you have it. That one's in the books. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time, Scott, as we start our new format here every 2 weeks. So we'll have another brand new voice, though, that'll be joining us.
Yes.
So we're looking forward to
that.
We'll see if that
absolutely
a surprise. All right, why don't we plug some stuff? First, I do want to say, I believe Amazon Prime Day continues on Tuesday. If you're going to be shopping, be sure to do PlayStation.com/Amazon for all your purchases, and you help us out a bit. So we would appreciate it if you do that. I do want to also plug Scott, episode 500, which is coming in September. We will be doing a trivia tournament. We already have a very strong field with a good number of people. But if you want to get in, let us know. We are open to as many and whoever wants in to the trivia contest. And then we'll figure out kind of the format and how people advance once we see what the total number is. So be sure to just reach out to us separately or privately or in public, whatever you want to do, if you want in. Via Twitter or Facebook if you want into that trivia tournament, episode 500. Jen, anything you want to plug?
The newest episode of Geek and Sassy just came out a couple days ago, episode 25, in which we review a book and it exists as a Batman book. So I won't spoil anything, but actually I think it's probably one of our funnier episodes because we get a little perturbed by the story, and it just kind of goes off the rails. So check out Geek and Sassy number 25, and Talking Pop. We just had, I think, our fifth episode with Steve Willey, which was fun. Justin, you know how it goes on Talking Pop. Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to come up. And this one hasn't dropped yet, but I was a guest on Survey Says, and I think that should be probably at the end of July that comes out. So that was a lot of fun talking to Tim and Andy.
And making the rounds.
I know, right?
We had a new episode of No Holds Barred, the podcast. That's Aaron and I. Over the weekend, episode number 3, we dove into more tag teams for the GWWE Tag Team Project. We did a quick hit review of an episode of Hardcore TV of ECW from early 94, talked some guilty pleasure movies, and our favorite comic book characters as well. So check that out. Hoping to have a new Wrestling War Zone this week as well. Chad and I are up to In Your House 4, so that should be a good time seeing how he reacts to that. So you can check those shows out on the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed. Scott, what do you got going on?
Well, we had last week we had our newest episode of Main Event. Your man Brandon Howard was on. We talked about the first 6 months of the year in wrestling creatively, fiscally, and then we did our next TNA pay-per-view recap, classic recap. And this week on our Facebook page, we're going to give everyone a chance to vote, because next week on our next episode, in honor of the passing, I know it happened a while back, but the great Vader, we're going to do not one but two New Japan Classic match picks. We're going to do his debut in Japan, and then we're going to put up three matches on the Facebook page, and you, the listener, can vote on which other Vader match we're going to do. So that'll be up later this week, and then vote, and whatever one wins, we're going to add that to the show next week. So stay tuned.
All right, very good. Speaking of Facebook pages, we did create a brand new one for the PTBN Pop feed, and you should like that because we've had some fun discussion on pop-related topics there. We'll be sharing everything that's going on the Pop feed and also pop-related at PlayStation.com. So, of course, I'll be talking about the 80s tournament and other stuff going on there as well. So be sure to like that page. It's Facebook.com/PTBNPop. Very simple. Give us a like. We're trying to build it up. And that way we can have everyone in on the discussion. So check that out. And of course, our other Facebook pages are all out there as well. The Main Event one, like Scott mentioned, Wrestling Warzone has its own. And then Place to Be Nation, the Place to Be podcast. And on Twitter, Place Number 2 Be Nation. So with all that said, Jenny, hope you had a good time here in your premiere episode.
I did. It was a blast. Thank you so much for having me.
All right.
Well, welcome. We'll be back soon. Yeah.
Scott, like I said, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. We'll be diving into the June house show. And until then, I will see you Saturday, St. Mary's Day. Of course, one of the best weeks of the year. We'll be hanging out. Looking forward to that. Some sausage
Absolutely.
Peppers. A new picture. Keep an eye on the Facebook page.
That's right, yes.
I was joking. I said we should wear, you should bring a suit. And we should dress up for a nice promo photo for episode 500.
Yes.
Exactly. You should do that.
We will. We'll bring a nice shirt and tie, Scott. We'll do a little formal picture for episode 5. Okay.
All right.
Maybe we'll do a full shoot. We'll do some funny ones and real ones. You know. Really, I think we owe it to ourselves to do a nice family shoot. So
I agree. Family shot.
You should get one of the prom pictures. Right. So, like, Scott holding you from behind.
Mm-hmm. I don't mind being screened from behind. I'm okay. All right.
Long time.
We're out. Everyone, bye.
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 Girl, bye. We'll be right back.
I'll buy his body, catch a little tunes. I'll skip a minute ditties. I wanna bust all your balloons.